All right. Well, since we left David last week, he has carried on with defeating other tribes and other nations and taking over. Just kind of, this is a little bit of it. I thought this was interesting. It's when he defeated the Moabites, he said he made them lie down on the ground and measure them off with a length of cord. And every two lengths of them were put to death, and the third they were allowed to live. But he went on, carrying on and taking and doing, and then it brings us to today. What, if you knew about David and you knew of his successes, let's say, his winning of wars and taking over countries, how would you think of him as a king? Or as a leader? Mm-hmm. Would you maybe think he was a little arrogant? I'm real powerful. I can do what I want to do. I've got all the wealth now.
I think sometimes he did. Just look at the things that he supposedly in his mind got away with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in the end he didn't, but at the time it was going on, it was not a big deal.
But we're going to see today, not only did he show his power and acquiring a lot of land, a lot of people, a lot of just wealth, let's say, but he's going to show kindness today. He's going to show, if you want to say, his true heart. Because we're in 2 Samuel chapter 9, and it starts out, David asking, is there anyone remaining from the family of Saul that I can show kindness to for Jonathan's sake? And so there was a servant of Saul's family named Ziba. They summoned him to David, and the king said to him, are you Ziba? And I am your servant, he replied back to David. If you were Ziba, and you got word that the king wants you to see him, how would you feel? Just like if you're at work, and somebody comes, and the president, the company, the boss, big man wants to see you right now. Do you freeze up? Do you expect the worst of most of the time? But what Samuel is trying to fulfill, a covenant he promised Jonathan, his close friend, that you know he would support the house of his dad, he would take care of them. And Ziba being the, let's say, the last one or the person who knew more about them, he asked him, could you help me? If there's anyone left in Saul's family that I can show the kindness of God to. Because in verses 3 through 5, it says the king asks, is there anyone left that I can show the kindness of God to? And he says, there is still Jonathan's son who was injured in both feet. And David asked him, where is he? And he answered, you'll find him in Lodabar at the house of Michar, son of Amiel. So David had him brought from the house of Michar, son of Amiel, in Lodabar. Same scenario. If we're talking about Mephibosheth, if you were him and your family's gone and you're injured maybe from battle, you can't do anything, and then someone comes to you and says, come, go with me. King David wants you to come to his throne. There again, the question comes up, how would you feel?
Don't you think he's probably, you know, like they just gonna finish off?
Finish.
That's what I'm
yep.
thinking.
I'm the last one. But David, which if you think about it, is Mephibosheth being injured, he really wasn't any threat to David. He probably couldn't do battle with him or anything of that nature. Because typically in the olden days, the successor to a king was somebody that was, let's say, powerful, strong, had the ability to rule and had the ability to take over. And, you know, how did Ziba feel? Did he think that maybe David was going to cause harm to Mephibosheth when he got him there? He wasn't sure about.
And if we go back and look, see, look at all the evil kings there were anyway, so why would he not put David in like the rest of them? They were all...
That's all they were?
Yeah, they were cruel and all they were just about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Because the writer kind of points out, if you were Jonathan's son, and maybe you understood the relationship that Jonathan and David had together, would you not feel drawn to want to be close to that person in your life? But they say Mephibosheth was as far away from David as he could get. There was still that lack of little trust there. But if you're Mephibosheth, do you feel like, okay, I'm going to get there and he's just going to make me a vessel. He's going to make me one of his servants. That's what's coming. But in the scripture, when David is bringing him there, he's really showing him grace. And our studies and our understanding, when you show grace to someone, you're really imitating God. Because he was the first person to show grace to us. Because we're taught, even in the Ten Commandments, we're to love our neighbors. Is that always easy to do?
And then they said David was a man after God's own heart, too.
But it took, let's say, a lot of effort for David, number one, to find Ziba and then Mephibosheth to keep his promise to Jonathan. And if we look at it in, let's say, real life, do we sometimes make promises to others, or you could even make a promise to yourself, I'm going to do better in a certain area, I'm going to try to do this better, but we don't achieve that goal. We verbalize it, but our actions don't back us up.
True. To someone, or even to yourself, I'm going to do better. And then you just flip side it and just go back to doing the way you were.
From all human.
Yes.
Yeah. Because the writer has a question or a statement. Are we excused from keeping our promises if it turns out to be too hard to do? Because he uses the example of your wedding vows. You promise that person standing there with you that you're going to honor, love, and cherish them till death do you part. You made that promise to them. Well, it's hard to do.
But it's an ongoing work, so that would be like David. Maybe for him, this was the beginning of his ongoing good. good work. You have to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He started with, he loved Jonathan better than anything. Mm-hmm. So why not go back to, you hate to say your first love, but for him, his first friend love.
Mm-hmm.
Very first, his closest friend. So why not start with somebody that you knew and had asked you to do something for him and you wanted to fulfill it for?
Mm-hmm. Because when Mephibosheth came, this starts in verse 6, it kind of says, when he came to Saul, the son of Saul came to David, he bowed down to pay him honor. And David said, Mephibosheth, and Mephibosheth replied, your servant. There again, when a leader brings you to them or calls you in, do you just come in and just acknowledge them as just a good old boy? Or do you honor them? You bow before them. There again, Mephibosheth, like we said, probably in the back of his mind, really didn't know what to expect. He's probably still thinking about what David might do to him. Because if you relate that to us as being in the position before God all the time, we are told, we're broken sinners, our wrongdoings did, we go back to Adam and Eve, that's where sin was, quote, created, and that's why we, quote, suffer because of their actions today. But do you know of anyone who professes to be a Christian that would stand on false claims? Or false rights? But we have to always understand that we're always continually seeking the mercy of God in our lives. But David's response to Mephibosheth, I guess you could say put him at ease, he told him, he said, don't be afraid, for I will surely show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land that belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will always eat at my table. You're Mephibosheth, and David tells you that. Are you completely understanding at that point? Completely, let's say, your fears are gone? Or do you think there's still something that he's just building me up, he's making me a promise, but he's going to take it away at some point?
It's kind of like us, though, that we kind of know the rest of the story in our life. We were given salvation. So he doesn't know what's going to happen to him, whereas we do know that when we go to the throne and
mm-hmm.
he offers us this same, like he's restoring stuff to him, that's restored to us every time that we go and ask forgiveness through his grace. They haven't dealt with that life. We've been afforded opportunity to read and study the scriptures and know what is ahead for us.
Mm-hmm.
They know that. So what he did would be, it's really in everyday life, the more human reaction than for us as Christians, because we know that we are saved by grace already.
Did you ever see anything like this?
No.
No. Because if you look at it, David offered Mephibosheth protection. Number one, he told him, don't be afraid. I'm going to show you the kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. There again, he's reaffirming his promise there. He offered Mephibosheth provision. I'm going to give you all the land of your grandfather back to you. He's sparing his life there. No, Sheba Beth, you know, if you think about that, he knows that I'm going to be taken care of now. But he also gave him, this writer put out, a privileged position. Because he is now part of, quote, let's say, the inner circle. You're part of my quorum, let's say. You're going to eat at my table. Not every citizen is offered that position.
My Bible says it's equivalent to a lifelong pension.
So, Mephibosheth, when I'm sure a lot of things are running through his head, verse 8 says, he bowed down and said, "What is your servant that you should notice a dead dog like me?" What they're saying or bringing out there, being a dead dog is, I don't have anything to give back. I can't serve you. I'm no good to you. You know, if you look at me, you know, I'm injured. I can't do anything for you to honor this back to you. You know, do you think Mephibosheth possibly thought that David was doing this for political power too? You know, he's just trying to build himself up again. I'm Saul's, let's say, great or grandson, and he's just trying to make the people look at him as being real powerful, someone that's real good. In a way that it was true, but not in the way that a lot of people would think, that David's doing this out of his own heart. Should we, when we confront God or talk to Him, should we mirror ourselves in the sense of being a dead dog like Mephibosheth to God? Should we look at it that way?
I don't think He wants us to look at it that way, because He loves us so much.
Mm-hmm. Now,
He enables us to be a blessing for other people and do other things for other people. So that's kind of what David was fixing to do. He was giving something back to Saul's son, and really it was a blessing for Saul's son. So what was going to happen to him if they didn't have him? His feet didn't work. Where was he just going to end up being? In his mind, he would have been there all the time.
If we look at this as an act of kindness, has anybody in here ever had one of these, quote, acts of kindnesses where you go up to pay for something through a drive-through, and that they tell you the person ahead of you has already paid? Go on.
I did last Christmas at Publix. You know, they have a deli, and I bought my lunch. And I went to check out, and this man ahead said, "I'm paying for her lunch."
Oh,
my God. So that happened to me at the curb store down from my house two times recently. I like those little peppermint, red mints. And I went in there and bought one, because that was the only one that had left, the peppermint. And I was getting my money out of my purse, and this young black man was standing behind me, and he said, "Ma'am, I got that."
Oh.
She just took his money and didn't take mine. And then it happened again. It happened before that.
I don't know who that man was. I told him. I said, "You must be a good Christian man." He said,
"Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to give back." And it was a person I wanted to see.
So did it take you aback a little bit?
It really did.
that some.
Especially this day and time, you know.
Do you think, because now we go back to Ziba. All right, you're Ziba, and you've gone and you've brought Mephibosheth back, and maybe you've witnessed and heard everything David's going to do for him. Do you think, well, what about me?
I went and got him, so mm-hmm. What is my part?
Because it says, starting in verse 9, it says, David summoned Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him and bring in the crops so that your master's grandson may be provided for. And Mephibosheth, grandson of your master, will always eat at my table. And my scripture says that Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. And it goes on, Ziba said to David, your servant will do whatever my lord the king commands his servant to do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and all the members of Ziba's household were servants of Mephibosheth. And Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem because he always ate at the king's table, and it was crippled in both feet. Well, Ziba, in a sense, he became the steward of Mephibosheth, but a steward in those days was a real honored position.
Is that like property manager?
Probably. Mm-hmm. You're going to rule over all of my property for me, and I will reward you. Now, it also allowed Ziba the privilege, or let's say, or the access to money and power. Have we seen people take advantage of that in other people's lives? You know, I'm in charge, but, you know, when I pay your bills, I'm going to write another little check, and it's going to go in my pocket. And you thought it went somewhere else.
You know, that was like Henry at Bay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because.
Well, in our lesson, I was just looking, it says Ziba would later try to maneuver his fortunes more to his liking. So
mm-hmm.
I guess he was
kind of
a little bit, but he was a little bit.
Could have been.
But at that time, it was. Don't you know that it made him feel like he had the security too?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't necessarily mean he started off in the frame of mind, I'm going to end up talking it, but then like the power and stuff, like, but you know, but that was the security for him to be able to harm him.
Because Luke 16 verse 8 says, for the children of this age are more shrewd than the children of light in dealing with their own people.
So you're saying more families have more problems than outsiders?
You have to think about that. The children of this age are more shrewd than the children of light in dealing with their own people. 16, verse 8, if that's right. Because it says, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly, for the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. Makes you stop and think. Because if you think about it, what we have, we consider it all to be ours. It's mine. I've worked hard for it. I've toiled for it. And I'm going to hang on to it. But really and truly, if we look at it in a way that someone did an act of kindness for me, shouldn't I want to pass that on? Because really, what I have is truly not mine. It all belongs to God anyway.
We're just using it while we're on this earth.
Mm-hmm. We're to use it wisely. Because we're just the stewards, and God is the owner, and it says He's pleased when we show generosity with what He's entrusted to us. Now, you say that, but that doesn't mean just go out and give everything away. That would be foolish. He wouldn't want you to do that. But when we go back to Ziba and talking about him just a little bit, when it says he had 15 sons and 20 servants, really in those days that would be considered that he was wealthy to have all of that. So if you were Ziba, would you dishonor David's word to you, his charge to you? Or would you take it that this is an order from the king and I'm to do what he has asked me to do? Or like you said, do you bow up and say, I don't need you. I've got my own. I don't need this. But can we say about David, and we talked about it earlier, that he is a man of God. He is the image of God, so to speak. We have to understand that God, He receives us in grace and really provides far more than we could ever expect. It's up to us to be good stewards of what He's given us, like David was. Do you think about it, David, we mentioned earlier, he, all the wealth, all the power he had, all the things he had accomplished, let's say, taken over, David could have just said, it's all about me. But he didn't.
That's bad, we don't have kings like that, people like that. Just think it'd be a whole lot better world if we had people like David running our country.
And it's sad that someone like that could do something for someone, but then they're going to be criticized in today's world. You really, that's, like Joyce said, that's part of what our society is imbalanced in, is instead of looking at someone and knowing that they truly did something to help someone, no, we've got to pick at them. He's only doing it to do this. He's only doing it to do that.
Well, it just amazes me. I know we live in a good town, but the people that come along and say, could I help you? Well, I guess I'm getting along like this. And said one day, come on, you walk me like a little old lady. And that's all right. It also has its advantage.
That's right. Yeah. That's why I carry a cane. Somebody's like, can I open the door for you?
And I'll ask them to help me across the street. I think I'd ask a lot more because I worked at the hospital.
Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
But I know last Sunday I got at Walmart and I just stood there and said, I thought, this is over. And here, to a couple of things. I have to look at them to judge them. And I said, would you mind having me across the street? Oh, no. And her husband stopped. They both have. And when we got inside the door, I said, I'm fine now. I can take care of them. I said, you got to go again.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And, you know, and it does, a lot of people, it does their part good if you do ask them to help do something, you know, because
Last 6 to Sunday night when they wanted our house, I said, I'm just not ashamed at all to ask people to help me. And I haven't paid for some medicine for it, too. Of course, it was just a change out of the pocket, and I think the man owned the grocery store. So it was 20-something cents, but anyway, he says, yeah, I'll take care of that. And then I've had him to buy my food and offered to buy my food.
Thank you.
And I think there's a whole lot more kindness in the world than
We give credit too.
Mm-hmm. Right. We look at the bad stuff instead of good stuff.
But sometimes when people offer kindness, you're afraid to accept it because of the way the world is today.
Right. That's true.
You gotta have discernment. You gotta be careful.
And then you as Christians, though, you don't stand around and tell people how kind you are. Because I help you walk across the street, or I got your buggy for you, or I pay for this. We just do it and move on. So you don't pat yourself on the back. We do a lot of kindness within this room. We're all kind in our different ways. And if you ask us to stand up, we can probably give an example of testimony. But we're also humble. So we just do it and don't think about it and don't want it.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't wear it across our back.
I helped you across the street. Don't forget. So the next time you see me, buy my lunch.
Words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.